Everybody, we're the Con Artists. We're back for another podcast episode. This time we've got myself, Dan, and Scott on, and we're going to be talking about the show Aldnoah.Zero. Just some disclaimers for you with this podcast. This podcast is definitely going to contain a lot of spoilers, so if you have not seen Aldnoah.Zero Season 1 and are sensitive to spoilers, please save this podcast for after you have watched the show. Also, in case you're curious, we are fully aware that Season 2 is in effect, but we have avoided watching or reading anything about Season 2 in order to make this podcast. So our comments and our everything we're going to be talking about is basically all about Season 1. All right, so let's kick it off. Dan, you want to tell us what this show is about for anyone who hasn't seen it?
Sure. Aldnoah.Zero is basically about an alternate world of our own where in the 1970s, humanity discovered a hypergate on the moon, sent people to Mars, discovered super technology. Then the Martians basically ended up fighting against the Earth, came here, started a war in 1999, after which there was a brief peace until 2014 when the Martian princess comes to Earth, tries to sort of get an actual peace process rolling, and an assassination attempt spoils all of that. The Martians decide to invade and really basically take Earth to task this time, and it picks up from there.
We're focusing on a bunch of kids who have been trained as child soldiers from a young age, and all we really understand in the beginning is that the Martians possess this special power, which we call Aldnoah in the show, and that gives them a huge leg up over Earth and all of our technology.
Yeah, like, Earth has a large number of pretty basic mechs, and the Martians have a small number of incredibly high-tech mechs using this Aldnoah power.
Agreed. So I'm interested, what got you guys into the show? Because I actually watched it when it was coming out, episode by episode, and what drew me to it was it looked like a really awesome war drama. It looked like it had a sense of realism, which I seem to be craving now that I'm getting older. And I love the character designs, and it had the Gen Urobuchi sticker on it. So I have an endless love for Madoka Magica, and I was like, are you kidding me? He's on board with this? This show is going to be heartbreaking, but probably amazing. So that's why I got into it.
Huh. Well, when I jumped in, I honestly knew absolutely nothing about the show. I didn't know who made it. I didn't really know what it was about other than it seemed to be mechs. But boy, everyone just kept talking about it. And I was like, well, you know, everyone's talking about it. It's probably worth seeing. So that's all I had going in.
As far as me, Sue, I was in some ways in the same boat as you. Basically heard that the Madoka crew does mecha, and that alone was enough to make me say, all right, I am interested. Saw the first episode. It was incredibly well-paced, very interesting, a lot of good establishment for the world. The mechs were interesting. It looked like just kind of a fresh take on the genre. And so I figured, you know, let's keep going. Let's see where this train takes us.
Definitely. So that actually segues us pretty nicely into talking about episodes 1 through 3 really quick. I loved episodes 1 through 3. They were phenomenal. I remember, I mean, everything looks gorgeous, first of all, and it's really fun. But we're, you know, set up with this world where everything looks realistic, feels realistic. We get a sense of who our characters are. You know, we meet Nao and Yuki and Inaho and all the other people on the team. And I liked the whole feel of the show. And I remember at the end of episode 1, I believe it is, where the princess is almost assassinated. And I was like, oh, thanks, Gen Urobuchi, killing off characters already. And I forget exactly what's happening, but I think one of the Martian ships comes down out of the sky, and just that scene of all of them, like, descending on the Earth with the knowledge that they were waiting there the whole time to come down, it was this really intense and almost chilling scene, and then something explodes. They either run into a tank or one of the Earthling cataphracts, as they're called, and it explodes in midair. And there's, like, these kids looking out of their window, and they see the explosion happen, and they're like, look, it's a shooting star! And it's, like, this horribly tragic scene where, you know, you get a sense of, is this how I look when I watch the news or something? Or, like, when I see war on TV, am I also this blinded by the whole thing. Like, people are dying, and, you know, these kids are kind of looking at it like, hey, cool, shooting stars.
Hmm. Yeah, like, going in, it was, it's amazing how quickly they were able to establish the stuff you needed to know. Like you'd mentioned before, like, kids are being trained from a young age in school. Like, every kid learns how to pilot a mech. And already you're like, wow, Earth is very different from what we know today. If, you know, just with that sort of thing going on. And yeah, the art is gorgeous. And you're already pretty interested to see where it's going to go. And, I mean, you can kind of see that something's going to go wrong with the peace mission. But where it goes from there is interesting. You're like, is Earth ready for this? Have they? I mean, it seems like they've been preparing, but now is we're going to find out, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, now is where the rubber meets the road, right? I do want to take a brief aside to say that the music in the show is just beautiful. I think we're going to have a whole segment on just the music, so I won't talk too much about it. But it's just phenomenal. The whole soundtrack fits really well, and it just sounds amazing. A lot of songs are either catchy or incredibly tragic. Even the, like, instrumental pieces, sound really nice. And I loved the music in this show, so.
Definitely. It's very well
definitely
done.
A highlight.
Yeah, when they want you to, like, have, when they want to let you know that it's time for, like, pulse-pounding action, they've definitely got music that gets you into it.
Yep.
Yes, yes. And then when there's those calm, quiet moments, the music also complements that, so I loved every minute of it. We also have no fan service in this show, really.
Woohoo!
Oh, thank goodness.
Thank goodness.
It's so rare. It's so very rare.
Because of the show this short, you don't got time for that.
Mm.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Yeah, it's true. There is one scene, which we'll probably talk about later, that I guess you could debate that it's fan service, but I certainly didn't consider it as such.
Oh, the shower scene there.
Yeah, the shower scene.
That was a lot
where...
more brutal than it was fan service, and I certainly appreciate
right.
what they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing I really loved, I'm not sure how you guys took it, was Lieutenant Maruto having PTSD due to his involvement during the, I think it was during Heaven's Fall, which is the first...
The first war, right?
The first war, yeah. Thank you, Dan. So... he has this scene where he ends up having to kill his tank mate, and he just has never gotten over it. He actually can't pilot one of the cataphracts anymore because he just has a meltdown, an anxiety attack, basically a panic attack every time he gets into one. And I thought this was an incredibly realistic and engaging part of the show. I really liked all the scenes where that happened because it gave it such a human touch that you don't normally get in one of these war shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you know, they go through the PTSD, they're, like, trying to cure him of it, but, I mean, by the end of the show, like, when it's time to go down there and have the big final battle, he still pretty much isn't capable of piloting a mech at all.
Correct.
So, like, I mean, he's pretty much just there to kind of give advice and show off how terrible war is, so they don't just magically cure him, which they get a lot of credit for.
Mm-hmm. And it also gives another reason why we'd be following a group of teenagers acting as our heroes in a war drama. Because if this guy were fully in his right mind and didn't have these issues to deal with, he'd probably be the one that we'd be focusing on. Or if they weren't focusing on him and just using the kids, we'd wonder, why the heck are they doing this? There's a trained soldier right here. Why are we leaving it up to the young bloods? Well, in this case, it's a matter of necessity. Most of the actual soldiers are either fighting somewhere else or already dead. This guy cannot physically bring himself to do it for very understandable reasons.
Well, that, and also, I mean, like, for various reasons involving Heaven's Fall, like, no one really believes his story, so he's also kind of an outcast in the military itself. He's a very odd bird, basically, to even still be in the military at this point.
Yeah. Well, he's pretty much been demoted to training duty, which is the reason that he's even with these kids and not on the front lines in the beginning of the first place.
In current Earth culture, he's basically a, you know, a PE teacher.
Right.
So, like, he's not too high up on the totem pole.
I know. But, taking out the war moments, there's a really, really pretty scene where Nao and Asylum are sitting on the hull of their ship, end, I think she asks him why the sky is blue, or she talks about asking one of the other characters, Slane, why the sky is blue, and when he explained it to her, and she gets to see birds, I think, for the first time, and she's like, oh, I'd heard all about birds, and that was really cool. It's like they gave us a chance to touch on the more cultural aspects, because when you look at them, you know, they're called Martians, but they don't look any different than any other human. And so it's kind of hard to relate to those two being two separate cultures. But when she has her moments like that, you're like, wow, yeah, they live in this simulated environment where they don't get to see any of these things. And the fact the sky is blue, or that there are birds that fly in the sky, just amazes her. And it was these quiet, you know, sort of delicate but detailed moments that I really fell in love with.
Yeah, you do have to have something to complement the action.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying about the culture, it is definitely one of the interests in the show for me, was kind of trying to figure out the culture of Vers and also kind of what their deal is. Like, they've got that really weird long-range communications technology where you, like, go there in person, kind of, and wander around before you find the guy you're trying to call. Like, what's going on there? Or
yeah.
It seems like there's some kind of autocracy led by the emperor, but it's a feudal system, and it's like, this is interesting stuff, and they kind of give you little bits and pieces and leave you to sort of try to figure out the rest, and I like that stuff. You know, all right, what's going on here? Because they seem detailed enough that they've at least thought it out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Then you figure it out.
And speaking of Vers, the empire that runs Mars, they do not mess around, and this is one of the things that, you know, really grabbed me when we started the show. When the princess's assassination occurs, or what they think is the princess being assassinated, they immediately go to, you know, they go full on scorched earth on the planet.
Earth.
They, yes, exactly. They have all of these, they've what, how many?
I think it's like 37 orbital castles, which are these large spaceships that double as landing craft and
mm-hmm.
have a bunch of, you know, the mechs are in them, basically.
And like a significant portion of them suddenly descend upon major cities all across Earth, and what they don't destroy, they're pretty much in utter control of within the first 24 hours, and they immediately do things like, well, we'll get into the specifics in a little bit, but they make a lot of very sound decisions, so despite being so obviously overwhelmingly powerful, they're not being complete idiots about it. They're not just, you know, we've got thousands and thousands of dudes, we're going to throw them at the enemy because we know we can just keep on doing it. No, it's nothing like that. It's like, we are going to use overwhelming force in a very concentrated and very devastating manner.
Yeah, like when they strike, the first strike against the Earth forces that are coming in to stop them, it's like, are they going to shoot the mechs? Are they going to shoot the planes? No, they shoot the communication systems. You're like, yeah, that's pretty much the most important thing you can cut off.
Pretty brilliant right there. I mean, they just knock out any way for us to communicate. And it also, kind of bringing it back to Dan's point, is another reason why we end up just focusing on this one tiny subset of characters, because we can't reach out any other characters even if we wanted to.
Yeah, most of the really good military networks are down. I mean, there might be little stuff here and there, but they're basically, most people on Earth seem like they're cut off now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, in, I don't know, 10 minutes.
Yeah. That and their willingness to basically rock sites from orbit with meteor strikes if they don't have a vested interest in keeping a city intact. It's like, well, too bad. Just gonna drop a giant rock from space now.
Yeah, like, they do want to conquer the Earth, but they're not adverse to destroying opposition incredibly quickly if they have to. And it's like, all right, these villains aren't playing around. And that's good to see.
Right, but then at the same time, they never felt totally over the top. So playing into why I went into it to be a more realistic war drama, we were definitely getting that, you know, right there in those first couple episodes.
Yeah.
Let's dig into some of the specifics here, because there are parts of the show that I really loved and I want to talk about a little more in detail. Let's kick it off with some of the characters. So our main character Nao and his sister Yuki, I liked them a lot in the beginning. I was a little concerned because Nao is our totally stoic, I speak in monotone main character who takes everything really seriously, and Yuki's...
He's like Rey if Rey was a man.
He's like Rey if Rey was a dude. That's a pretty great description. Yuki's definitely the more, like, trying to make a joke out of everything, and You know, the you think she's somewhat lazy until she shows herself in combat and she is just as capable.
Yeah,
But
but she's also like legitimately concerned for the safety of her brother on a lot of occasions, which was good. I mean, you really kind of felt like they were family, even though they're supposed to be, one of them's a superior of the other in the military, they're also family.
yes, yeah, and that was a nice touch. And what I love most about now is really whenever we got into a battle with the enemy mechas, the Varus mechas, he always seemed to solve the problem using logic or real science. You know, he would take into account things like recoil of the gun or how much pressure this was putting on. I remember at one point one of the laser mech, or one of the mechs with a laser sword, I should say, he's like, okay, well, his laser sword causes such and such to heat up for a long time. He uses the idea of it using heat to his advantage. Like, a lot of what he does, it has a scientific basis. And as much as I realized we were getting a realistic war drama, even I wasn't expecting that. Since we did have Mecha, I was expecting something more pseudo nonsense, and I really was surprised pleasantly that we got that kind of realism in trying to take down an enemy who seemed overwhelmingly powerful.
Definitely, like, like the first mech they fight, oh god, he's invincible, like nothing can possibly damage him, his
Right, he's
armor's
like
immune to everything, and it's
invisible,
like,
and what the
yeah, he's all
heck?
these other things, and it's like, in a traditional mecha show they would just get a much, much bigger gun or something, or keep shooting him until it overwhelmed the defenses. Like in this case he's like, well, let's think about his shield. Like, he can't be blocking everything, or he couldn't see where he's going because he's blocking the light, and you're like, oh yeah.
That's
Or
brilliant.
yeah, his feet aren't absorbing everything, or he'd fall right through the earth. Oh yeah. So like you start to look at that mech and see that there are weaknesses to it that you can exploit if you really think about them, and he thinks quickly and carefully about them, and I appreciate that about him.
But it
Yeah, that
also
was
generally comes
exciting.
at a very big cost, because when he's fighting or when they're observing these mechs, it's usually by watching other soldiers and other mech pilots getting absolutely wrecked by them. So even though it's really cool to see a character exploiting their own, their own quick thinking and intelligence in order to find these weaknesses, there's a cost to it that they never sugarcoat. It's not like, well, this guy, after looking at it once, he's not Sherlock. He doesn't immediately know what this is. He has to observe and understand it, and doing so, sadly, often costs the lives of some people who may otherwise have lived if they had not been, trying to hold this thing off.
Right, and that's like the other half of his character is he is like practical to a fault. Like, if there was a scenario where he could like, he had to sacrifice people in order to get something to happen, he would totally do it if he thought it was the right choice and would in the long run be the best choice. So he's basically cold-blooded completely
This is true.
throughout the show.
And it's interesting because the other characters even sometimes call him on it. I remember there's a scene where like Inaho is holding down the fort. She's like the sniper, and she's sitting there, and she's like, now, what are you serious? Are you seriously waiting this entire time? Like, come on, tell me what to do, because I could be taken out at any moment. She's freaking out because she knows the cataphract is nothing compared to these other mechs, and now's like, no, I'm still really waiting to figure out what the enemy's doing. She's like, I am so vulnerable right now. Could we make with the you figuring out the science, please? So you can tell he's definitely got, an enormous cold-blooded sense to his character, which was unique, and I had some fun. I know we touched upon the lieutenant's PTSD, but there's one point where I think it's really early, like episode one or two or something, that Yuki takes a beating after helping the other members of her group get away in a tank. I think the invisible mech is chasing them in episode one or so, and her arm either breaks or gets severely damaged, and that lasts for a very long time. She's in that cast for quite a while.
Most
Like
of the
episode, I think the
show.
last episode, she's actually still using her. They give her like an exoskeleton arm thingy so she can still pilot her mech because, there's no time to wait for her to heal. We're at total war. And yeah, by the end of the show, it still isn't healed. And it was like, yeah, that's probably about how long it would take for an arm to recover. So why not to just magic that away?
Also, one of the things that I appreciated was the fact that they're using an exoskeleton system, the kind of technology that you would be able to get out of having mecha. It's operating on a very similar principle, not identical, but they come together nicely. It While the world isn't super advanced beyond ours, at least for the Terrans, for the Earthlings, there are hints here and there of higher level tech, and that was just a really nice one that, while maybe not part of everyday use, is the kind of thing that people would have seen. And while, things like that, things similar of that exist in the real world, it's not something that you typically see outside of like very specific medical trials. This is something that the military like has on hand and ready to use.
Agreed. So Yuki's, yeah, that's an interesting point. But yeah, it just goes to show that Yuki is a pretty awesome character, 'cause she actually thinks her exo arm is really cool. She's like, "Hey, check out my exo arm." Yeah, she thinks it's awesome, and I really loved her as a female character. She helps me along in all the terrible shows with terrible female characters. That being said, a Salem was not a bad female character either. You really didn't expect much out of her. She gets, rescued and, is aboard the ship, sort of. She's sort of a hostage, sort of a rescue. And, you're.
You're like, oh, it's a princess, and she's
Yeah, look
got
at her.
like a servant, Edelrissa, and you're like, oh, she's just gonna be some kind of a
Edelrissa.
princess the whole
Yeah,
thing.
and she's got this, giant white gown that she wears, and you're like, all right, you are basically that character that's gonna sit there and say pretty things and want to stop. You're my new Relina Peacecraft. That's so cute.
Oh, jeez.
She's my new Relina, and I expected very little of her. And when stuff needs to get done, she gets it done.
Right, like when the first time when he now comes across her, she pretty much just like spin kicks him onto the ground and then holds his hand behind him because she's worried that someone's going to try to kill her. It's like, oh, all right, so you can defend yourself and you're willing to use that immediately if you feel threatened. And she, like, in terms of using, like, coldly assessing the situation and making the best choice, she's second only pretty much to Mal. Like they're a pretty good pair.
Yeah, she does a pretty nice job, and all right, so let's talk about the shower scene now, because
Ah, yes.
we kind of have to touch on it. So there's a scene where Riette, who I like to affectionately call Dat Martian Traitor Girl,
Ah,
appears,
yes.
and both of them are in the shower, and she basically attempts to take the necklace that Slane had given Asylum and choke her to death with it in the shower.
Which
So,
she succeeds
yes,
at.
which she does. She chokes her, which what you think is to death, and she passes out, and all things go haywire, because at this point we have discovered a battleship that runs on the power of Aldnoa. It has anti-gravity power, and due to the fact that she is of royalty, of Ver's royalty, of the bloodline, she can activate Aldnoa, and she gets the ship to work, and they're floating. And so as soon as she passes out, the ship starts to like careen downward, and you're like, oh geez, oh geez. So it's a very, tension-filled moment. Like I said, I mean,
Yeah, like she's unconscious for long enough that she goes into cardiac arrest, so like she pretty much
exactly
is dead.
right. So like I said, we could, if someone came and tried to argue with me about this being fan service, I'd have to convince me pretty hard.
You'd have to be into some pretty strange fan service, let's just put it
Yeah,
that way.
like I mean,
You gotta have a
and
very
like,
particular type of thing there if you're going to
I
enjoy
could see it in
watching this
some
girl assault
ways.
and attempt to choke out someone else.
I could see it in some ways, but you'd really have to fight kind of hard for it. It's an interesting choice too, because honestly, you need to pick her when she's most vulnerable. Edelrito's out of the picture because she runs off to run an errand for the princess who forgot something. I mean, yeah, that's without a doubt the perfect timing. Take her out right there. So, that
Yeah, which is
happens.
also kind of the strength of Martian Traitor Girl. Like, she's been waiting this whole time to finally get back at the princess, and then bam, she's got her chance.
Yeah, and she
Because
takes
her.
it.
She takes it and goes
Oh,
for it
yeah.
pretty hard.
Because she had basically lost her family and, by extension, I guess friends, because they had been the ones to set up the original assassination. So when that failed,
Well, no, even when they
well,
thought it
even before
succeeded, they still
that,
made
yeah.
they wanted no one around to make to be able to tell them that it was a planned.
So they got
So
rid of so the Martians decided to get rid of them because they were a potential loose end rather than rewarding them. And so now not only is she, the daughter of a Martian double agent stuck on Earth, She is also now, possessed of a deep-seated hatred for Mars. And
Well,
so.
and specifically the princess, who, if she just, the assassination of her was what caused this whole thing to go south.
Right, so she, it's somewhat misdirected rage, but it's understandable. And really,
Right.
being the only target in easy reach, well, she, like you said, she saw her shot and she took it.
Right.
Yeah, she goes for it, and it pretty much works. And yeah, I mean, the scene where her family gets annihilated is pretty brutal. I'll give it to her. I mean, that's Trillium, I believe, from episode one or two. And I mean, he's just like, okay, so thanks
Nice,
for
the
helping me.
invincible mech pilot.
Yeah, the crazy mech pilot. He gets into his mech, and his hand just comes down and wipes out all of her family. And she's standing there on like the precipice of the bridge, knowing that everybody she once knew and loved has been just destroyed in an incident. And you're like, wow, okay then. That was a pretty intense moment. So continuing on with our sweet female characters, how awesome is the captain? Because when Mag Burridge shows up and is like, I'm taking control of this biznatch, I was totally on board with that. I mean, I love her. I love her attitude. I love her pseudo-feminine bickering with the other captain. Like, they're so serious with each other and then want to look at the other and go, this is why you don't get a date, right? And I was like, that's hilarious.
Yeah, but like talk about making decisions under pressure. Like Magbridge is a extremely competent commander. It's like, all right, well, everything's going terribly wrong. Like she never like loses her cool. She always kind of makes the best decision she has available to her, which usually isn't that great. Like she's piloting around a regular old ship against these ridiculous super mechs, and she makes the best decision she can.
It's not even
So
like
you
a
gotta give her a lot of
warship. It's
credit.
a transport. It
Well,
has
it's got guns on
it's
it,
got
but
enough
like
it's got enough guns to defend itself, but it's got enough guns to defend itself against, mundane things like aircraft and maybe
Yeah,
surface boats. It isn't
yeah, we're talking like Somali pirates here
it
for this
isn't
one to
ready
fight
for,
off.
it isn't ready for like giant six-armed rocket punching mechs.
Right, and she does the best she can with what she's got, which is impressive.
Yeah, I was
So.
I really loved her as a character. And actually, when she goes up against Marito, because it turns out that she is the sister of the man that he was best friends with slash tank mates with slash had to shoot in the head to save him sort of moment that causes him his PTSD. That was some real tension and some real amazing character drama. And when it was sad because that doesn't last long enough. Well, I know we'll talk about that later, but I was like, more of this, please, because you two are just the dynamic between those two was really great.
Without it falling into the like, oh, they're going to end up in a romantic situation. It's like, not really,
No,
no.
no,
definitely
they're
not.
definitely not. It was
Like,
just a really well done scene. I think the best they come to is like sort of respect for
Yeah,
each other.
pseudo acceptance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much as far as we get.
Yeah.
For the current situation, it serves my purposes not to throttle you.
Right, exactly. So we've talked a lot about the Earthling side, but the Varys side had some pretty cool dynamics itself, like the what was it, Crutio? Crutio was a pretty cool character. I mean, you think he's like the biggest jerkwad on Earth until you kind of get more of his motivation and his motivations against other counts. And that was something I didn't really expect, came kind of out of left field, but was interesting to see and watch.
Certainly.
Yeah, really. Like he, it's like, and there's the other count who ends up kind of being the main villain of the show, but both of them have their reasons for what they're doing, their motivations. Like, yeah, they're kind of on the same side. They're fighting Forvers against Earth, but they don't align necessarily with what they're with their goals and what they're trying to do and or protect or capture. So, like, they're kind of fighting each other, kind of not. They're basically it's well done and kind of subtle, like the differences between and. I don't know, they did a really good job with those two.
And it helps to sell the idea that, well, why hasn't Vers just won already? Well, it's partly because nobody really completely trusts each other. They're all loyal to the
Yes, that's a
Emperor. They're
big
all loyal
deal.
to Mars. Yeah, but they never they don't operate like a modern Earth military, for example. There's no absolute authority, there's no absolute control. It's just sort of an agreement between all of these noble houses that, all right, you all are going to go down to Earth and wreck up stuff. We'll stay up here and monitor the situation and, send in reinforcements as necessary. But there's very little communication. It's all basically personally handled by the people in charge of each castle. And so every time there's a somewhat weird decision, or like, why are we only sending one of these super mechs out at any given time? Well, besides their limited numbers, it's also they have a sort of vaguely feudal medieval sort of sensibility, but they're allowed to have that because their stuff is so much better than ours. It doesn't, it's not, at first at least, it's not a hindrance, really, but it does start to
Right.
become a weakness as it gets further along, and you start to realize that they're not taking advantage of some of the weaknesses that humanity has left at this stage.
Right. Like, it basically does come down to, like, one super powerful dude versus a bunch of guys, like, weak guys on a team, which is actually kind of the inversion of the usual formula, right? The good guys usually get the super duper mech and have to fight legions and legions of bad guys and, like, cheapo mechs. But
More
this
often than
time,
not.
Earth's got the cheapo mechs, and they've got the super mechs, and it's kind of interesting to see the dynamic shift like that.
It's awesome, yeah. But remember, we have science, so everything's better.
We do have science on our side, and we got teamwork on our side, kids.
Yes,
We're gonna do this.
teamwork on our
Yeah.
side.
Coordination was great.
Yeah, it was good. So you guys got to talk about how they knocked out the communications first and how you thought that was a cool military tactic. Was there anything else military tactic-esque that you guys wanted to geek out about that the show gets right?
Well,
That was a pretty big one. Let me go ahead.
no, that yeah, no, you're right. That was probably the first thing that indicated, like, wow, these people have at least a strong idea of what they're talking about. A lot of anime just don't, it doesn't feel like they get war in the sense that their country hasn't really been at war in a very long time. Not saying they haven't at all, but it's mostly relegated history to them. We live in a country that is still at war to a disturbing degree. So
America.
it's a little more just kind of pervasive in our culture, so it's easier to pick out when things aren't right. And this one, I wasn't getting a lot of that. It was like, no, this actually makes sense. These people, the people who were writing this, at least looked into, concepts of, conflict in history to at least, get something that passes muster. It is believable, if not realistic. And
Yeah, like it takes a realistic amount of time to get places, like they gotta steam there in their boat. They're concerned about, maintenance of the mechs and stuff like that, which is good. When they take down that mech in episode one, they have pretty careful coordination. They plan it out with their team members. They've got a plan that they've come up with ahead of time, and it all comes together really well.
Right. I think it's nice that everybody has a designated role. It's not like a Call of Duty perfect soldier scenario. Like Inaho is the sniper and she snipes stuff, right? And I guess Nao has a lot of different skills, but even he is restricted in a lot of ways. I liked the part where he was discussing some of the bullets he's using. He's like, okay, well, I can't use these bullets because they cause this. I'll have to use these other bullets that use less, they have less
Oh,
recoil,
right,
they do less
he's
this.
using like solid bullets because there's no like propellant in them that the enemy can destroy with his
Right.
plasma sword, so you can blow through his defenses, and it's like, yeah, all right,
Right, or this
I
is
can do
gonna
that.
split and like shatter this way so that when he cuts it, it's gonna be to his disadvantage. Like they never pull out that like shonen moment, where they're like, oh, thank goodness we have the super bullet. It's like, no, we have these regular bullets. Yeah, the supersonic bullet.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have the actual silver bullet
Yeah, ladies
from
and gentlemen, yeah,
JFK
we have the
assassination, and we're going to
Kamehameha
use
bullet.
it.
No, we have these bullets, and how do we use them in the best way possible?
And one of my favorite scenes still goes to, was it episode 4 where they introduced the fellow with the plasma sword?
All right,
I
yeah, I think
believe
roughly around.
so.
Yeah, after their defeat of the first super robot from Verse, they run into this guy who wields a plasma sword. We'll get more into him later, but when he first runs in, he's just tearing through everyone because while the Earth mechs are fairly decent at long range combat, they've got sniper rifles, assault rifles. I think some of them have like rocket pods and whatnot eventually, but they've got like a combat knife. They're not designed for close range combat, and this guy is just tearing through everyone. And it's like, we have no way to defeat this guy. We are at a distinct disadvantage. We've got to get out of here. So what do they do? Does, like, someone nobly sacrifice themselves to try and slow him down? Do they, like, what do they do? No, they hit him with a shipping container. Like,
yes!
A dude in a crane slams one of these into the side of his mech and actually, like, damages it a bit. And it's not enough to bring him down, but it is enough to annoy him and just, you know, distract him long enough for the ship to, you know, get armed and out of there. So it's those kinds of things where it's like, this is them winning by coordination and pluck, really.
That's a good word for it.
Yeah, that is. All right, well, you guys got to have your moment, so can we talk about my favorite moment? It was just so epic. So I believe it's somewhere in episode 9 or 10 where, so there's a plan at this point. We're gonna attack Sal's bomb at the floating castle, and we've discovered that the moon base has been compromised, where they eventually go to seek some refuge. And they need to get the princess onto this other ship so that they can take off and put her into, I believe, a pod so that they can send her, you know, as something down to the floating castle. And
yeah, they should just go turn off its Eldnoa drive.
Yeah, she needs
basically
to turn off the Eldnoa drive with her ability, right? And, you know, there's the song Keep On Keeping On is playing in the background, and just out of these doors blows through this giant Hummer looking thing. And you look, and it zooms in, and Edel Rito, this tiny, tiny little girl who's drawn to look like she's about 7, is driving this Hummer, and she's like, "Oh, Hime-sama!" And she's like, she's flooring this thing as she tries to get, oh my goodness, like, she's dodging bullets, she's doing whatever, like, things get shot, and she's like, "Oh my!" Like, it's really funny. And she's trying to get the princess onto the ship, and it totally works. And it's, like, my favorite scene ever. I was like, oh my goodness, Edel Rito, thank you so much. Also, how are you even driving that thing? But oh, it's okay.
Right.
It's okay. It's just an
amazing
scene.
You ask a lot of questions, like, how did you learn to drive a Jeep if you've only lived in a, you know, in a spaceship up till now? How are you reaching the pedals?
Yes.
But it was an awesome scene.
Yes.
Awesome though it was, it does kind of, you know, go very strongly against the otherwise relatively serious and realistic tone we were establishing. And I think that's probably, we've gone through a lot of what we liked, and there is a lot to like about this show. Let no one dispute that we do we all enjoyed it for quite a bit. But there are a lot of problems, and
yeah.
I think it's about time that we get into
Sorry,
that.
Sorry, Noah's here. It's about to get rough for you.
Yeah, it's about to get rough.
Yeah.
You know,
the gloves
I'm
are
gonna
off.
Kick it off with, where did all my character development go? Because as if you guys ended up listening to our first podcast, I have an endless love for character development. And dynamic characters and kind of the way characters interact with each other is something I take a real personal interest in a show. And these characters are about as static as you could possibly imagine. I mean, we mentioned Nao is this cold, calculating soldier, and there's never really a rhyme or a reason for it. And it's not like I was expecting this giant teen angst story, because that too would go against the realism we were shooting for here, but throw me something. You know,
he never emotes.
Exactly.
Ever.
Throw me anything, you know, like
like that one time when he avenges his friend by taking out the first mech, he kind of was like, "Yeah, got that guy." And like, that's it.
Yeah.
He never emotes again.
Right. And we barely remember that guy. So it never seemed like he cared about anything. He was so stoic. I couldn't get into him after a while, and I remember...
Yeah, like, you're too perfect of a soldier, buddy. Like, there's nothing beyond just winning.
Right, I remember there's one scene where, I believe they're at the moon base, and they're all playing with the simulator, and...
Oh, right, the...
Not the,
oh,
not
that's
the
Siberia
base. This
okay.
is the base
Russian
in Siberia.
Base, yeah.
Right. The moon base is a communications thing. That's different. But I know the one you're talking about. Yeah, that's the one in
Right,
Russia.
right. Thanks, guys. So,
Sorry.
no, that's right. So they're using the simulators, and at one point Nao says something, and Inaho is like, it's impossible to tell what you're thinking because you have the same face all the time. And Yuki's like, oh no, that's his like love face or something, because they're talking about the princess, and they're like, how do you even know that? And she's like, I'm his sister, I can tell. And I was waiting there, I was waiting for the moment where she's like, because we're siblings, I saw him once upon a time be happy, and now he's not. No, I got nothing. Absolutely nothing. And, the PTSD scenes with Lieutenant Maruto, they were few and far between, and they were great, but they never evolve or amount to anything. And at the end, I did think it was realistic that he cannot pilot the mech, but he's also somewhat baggage like throughout the show because of it in some ways. I mean, nobody elevates themselves above what they already are. I think the best example is Calm. Calm, he's one of the pilots like everybody else, and he when that one kid dies in episode one or two, he's like, we need to avenge that kid, and we definitely need to do it with force. And they're like, Calm, no. And he's like, all right, well, nah. And then they send him off to be a mechanic, and it's like a joke almost. Like every once in a while they flash to him, and it's like, hey guys, Calm is still a character. And you're like, thanks, camera.
Yeah, like, is he gonna jump into a mech and this time he'll take her? No, he just always is kind of a mechanic. And really, all of the side characters do this. Like, most of them become bridge bunnies. They all become bridge bunnies and learn how to pilot the ship, basically, but they stop really having any development, or they're just the guy who pushes the buttons on the bridge,
Exactly.
right?
I think Inaho sees the most action as the sniper, but then, you got like Nina, who's the bridge, definitely the definition of a bridge bunny. I think she's in training to learn to be the deck manager of a ship, and she just kind of every same thing. The camera just flashes to her every once in a while, and they're like, guess what? Nina's still totally a character, and she's
Still pushing buttons, and
still
that's it.
doing that. Yeah,
Ah,
it was
well.
unfortunate. I never got the character development that I thought I was signing up for, and with a war drama, I expected some level of character development.
And to a degree, I think we can blame that on the length of the show being only, what, 12, or is it 13? 12 episodes long. And also the fact that very little actual time passes within the show, maybe a matter of weeks, if that. So that does sort of account for it a little, but it still feels like there could have been a little bit more of a dynamic between the characters. But we keep flashing back and forth between so many fights that there's very little time for anyone to kind of really come to grips with what they've just dealt
That's
with
true,
before
but
they're thrown into the next
Madoka
one.
Magica was 12 episodes too, and there's so much character development you can't even handle it. So that probably didn't help either, that I was expecting so much more out of this show because it had the Genro Ochi label, and I maybe that steered me in the wrong direction, but
Maybe all the character development flew away with him when he left.
yes, that's an interesting fun fact that he was actually only
Oh,
around
yeah.
for episodes one through three, hence why we seem to be in love with those three episodes, and then things took a bit of a downhill slide. So we mentioned how cool we thought all those mechs were from Vers, and how they have all these different powers and stuff based on Aldnoa. And the show turned itself from a really cool war drama into a Mecha of the Week battle. This drove me nuts. It was crazy.
Just totally nuts.
It was totally nuts because it didn't make any sense, because after a while it was like, all right, so we threw Super Mech A at you. Now we're gonna throw Super Mech B at you. This time he's
Yeah,
got a sword.
it was kind of like, whatever happened to Vers being brutal and efficient? Like, I get the whole feudal warlords thing, but once these kids start being a threat, just send down like five mechs and pound them to dust, all right? Instead, yeah, they send down one mech at a
It
time.
felt very
And then they have all
shonen.
the time they need to figure out how to beat the mech, and then they beat the mech. And it's like, no. These guys meteor bombed a city because they thought there might have been a dude with a gun in it that was like going to fight them once. Like they wouldn't suffer, put up with this one mech at a time nonsense.
Yeah, that drove me crazy because it really began to feel like what I like to describe as boss battles, you know? It's like, all right, okay, we cleared stage one, we gained some EXP, we all learned something. Oh, boss battle two has shown up. Laser sword. Boss battle three has shown up. It's, oh, look, we got a female enemy, and she shoots, oh, you know, she's got six arms that she shoots out with rocket punches.
Oh, no. Like, and that was the moment for me when I think I realized the show was going in a bad direction. Because, like, the first guy was like, wow, really cool science-y powers. Like, I haven't really seen this before. Second guy, I'm like, sword. I mean, sword. I mean, there's been a lot of mechs with swords throughout anime. But they did cool things with it. And then rocket punches.
I know, and the enemy's like, name was like Femine or something. It's definitely spelt something that looks like Femine. And I was like, oh no.
You're like, rocket punches, like that's like super robot show stuff. We don't need that in our quasi realistic mecha show.
And on top of that,
she was under the
feudal
control
of
her particular landing castle, but we never met that guy. Like, we don't know who he is or what his interests are. It's just like, there's another person here.
So we have no idea. Like, the first two mechs that go after the main characters, we know why they're there. They're still in the vicinity of one of these landing castles, but they get all the way out to sea, head to this one island to make a stop, and she just happens to be there in this vast tract of ocean. She just happened to be in that area with no real rhyme or explanation ever given. I'm sure there could have been a reason, but because they never get to it feels out of place and tacked on.
Like, the story is cool because it's told from both the hero's perspective, like the Earthlings, and also the version perspective. Like, we get to see a lot of them and what they're doing from their castles and so on. But yet, despite that, we never have any idea what's going on Earth as a whole. Like, yeah, they knocked out the communication, so the Earthlings don't really know, but the guys in the sky castles in total communication all the time with each other, and we still have no idea how the war is going. Like, did they win already? Is there still pockets of resistance? Did they lose any other mechs except the ones now killed? We never have any idea.
That's true. We're very isolated.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you're going to show their side of the story. I need a little more.
Yeah, we lose a lot of context, and that definitely hurts, especially towards the end where they're upping the stakes in a way that we can only buy because they haven't told us what else is going on. We'll get to that later.
So, you know, in addition to losing what you were talking about, Dan, we also have to lose a little bit of consistency. I know, Scott, you had this point more so than the rest of us. At one point, Magbaraj uses the ship that they're on to try and shoot at some of the Vare's mechs, and it really does very little damage, showing us in a more vulnerable position. It was kind of an interesting point that we're almost aboard this transport vessel, and, you know, we don't have the kind of firepower that the enemy has. And then at one point, the Martian trader girl is totally in a mech, and she uses, I think, one of the simple cataphract snipers to hit the mech.
Yeah, it's like an Earth sniper rifle.
Yeah, and she's just like, all right.
And it...
that totally works.
And it blows that mech in half. Like, it's sort of been damaged, but this thing, like, this shot from her sniper rifle completely destroys the six-armed rocket punch mech.
Right, so...
and it's like, wait, we got these weapons?
Why isn't everybody in Aho? Yeah, with the sniper.
Like, I get that they have special defenses against the weapons, like the super shield or the guy in his sword, but, like, if every mech had a gun that could kill them, come on. We gotta do better than this.
We don't give our soldiers assault rifles because we want them to be fair. We give them assault rifles because they are the most unfair things that we can have on our side. And if you got something that can do that,
right, it just
hand this out to everybody.
I mean, are we even trying anymore? Or, again, are only the main characters any good at their jobs? And that it starts to feel a little more strained by the end.
Yeah. And that actually brings up something that I was thinking throughout the show, even from the get-go, but especially later on. Yes, all of Earth's communications have been cut, so that significantly hampers us, but think about it. During the Cold War, in our reality, we planned for such insane contingencies. If communications went down, if Washington D.C. or Moscow gets nuked, what do we do? We came up with the most insane plans, ranging from freighters filled with fissionable materials. Like,
hey, we needed nuclear landmines on the moon.
All
right,
you can't tell me that
first. It's a moon gap.
Sure, but You'd think that after, between 1999 and 2014, between the first war and the second one, are you telling me there wasn't at least one Air Force general crazy enough to say, "All right, well, all communications have gone down. That can only mean one thing.
Right,
It's
like we
time
didn't
to
try to
nuke
attack
the
their home
sky."
planet to see if that would stop them, like, throw nukes at it or something. And we have 15 years to plan for an invasion that we know is coming. And, like, Earth unites under one government. And all the resources of an entire planet put together, and the best we can come up with is something that gets knocked out in 10 minutes.
Yeah, like a bunch of fighter planes, and admittedly cool, but woefully underperforming mecha. And it's like that. I appreciate that we are going to lose, but it would be nice to see a little bit more back and forth to see like we have lost a f we have lost like three mechs, but
Yeah,
that's
on the
across a
Verse point of view.
continent from the Vers, and it's like
Right, I mean, they're
unfortunate but
going to win,
acceptable.
but
Keep
yeah, a
going.
little one-sided.
Give Earth
Yeah,
a
I don't know.
little
They just
more
seem like
credit, I
everyone
guess, is what I'm trying
acts
to say.
logically, but then you have to wonder about the prep they did in all that time.
Speaking of
Yeah,
logic,
good
actually, what
gracious.
about
Can we just get
Slayne and Nau?
into.
When those two meet up, Slayne's like the bodyguard for the princess for a while or something. He is her confidant to a degree, but he's also considered a second-class citizen because he's originally Terran by the Martians. So when he comes around and meets up with Nau, who is at this point, he and his friends are protecting the princess, you'd think that these two guys would open up a line of communication
Oh,
because they both want
and
this.
they
They
did
don't.
open up a
Neither of
line of
them wants this
communication. I mean, they were
conflict even going.
talking with each other while they took down the
Right, they
six-armed
work
mech.
together and it looks
They
cool.
fought
And the end of
together.
episode 10
Yeah, they
is just
fought
like, well, we
together.
really can't have that. So we're gonna have to throw all of that out. Like, now he's just sort of staring at him and he goes, oh no, you're definitely the enemy. Shoots him down. And it's like, there's no rhyme or reason for what you just did. I don't care how cold and logical you are. In
Right.
fact, because you're so logical, you should have realized that he could be a potential ally and was totally not working with the
Yeah,
enemy.
that
It
was the
made no
thing. Like,
sense.
it felt like the writers had to make them end up enemies, but they didn't really know how to write it, so they just kind of did it. Like, in like ostensibly Nau is worried that,
Yeah.
that Slayne is after the princess, like to kill her, not to protect her. But I mean, there's no more time for dialogue. I mean, he's been communicating with you. You actually know how many bullets he has left in his gun, 'cause he told you. So you know how much of a threat he is, and he's probably not going to take down the battleship. So you've got some time. There's no one else in the area. And instead, it's like, nope, we're immediately enemies. Let's do
Right, and a
this.
lot of the character development really just gets thrown out. I mean, I know Crutio has a really interesting sort of reveal that after all the horrible things he does, he finds out that Slayne was actually loyal to the princess this whole time, and he discovers that there's this huge web of lies going on amongst the other Martian generals, and he's like, oh my gosh, I need to do something, I need to undo this. And the main villain, Sausbaum, just like smushes him that very moment when he realizes his what he wants. And then he has to undo this conspiracy plot, which I was really getting into. It's like, no, that's way too interesting. Kaboom! So they just take him out.
Yeah, well, and interesting and hard to write, so this made it a lot easier to
Right, it's
write,
like the
I
writing staff had to take a vacation, just crush him.
think.
Yeah,
To just crush
they
him.
just make stuff simple.
Oh,
Yeah, it's like that was
yeah. You
fantastic
had
how
your
that could play
character
you off. And
arc, bam.
Sausbaum himself is terrible. Like, he reveals at the end what his true motivation was, and he's like, You see, I have orchestrated this entire plot because, dramatic mustache twirl, I was in fact in love with this woman, and she ended up dying because it turns out that to loop the story full circle, she was the one piloting the mech that ended up taking out Maruto's tank. And so he takes her out, actually, and that's the mecha that he sees descending from the sky that no one will believe him about. And that so that whole story links together, but she dies in the process. I think that's his fiance is piloting that mech, and she dies in the process, and he's like, oh, that's it. I'm pretty much gonna hatch the most elaborate plan you can think of to kill off all of the Earth now. For this character that we literally meet in like episode, or hear about, I shouldn't even say meet, we hear about in episode 11 or 12. And I mean, that was just terrible.
Yeah, they're
And his whole thing, though, also his logic starts to break down really quickly because, you know, he's still a competent commander. He's not, you know, he's not a schmuck, but he's all about, you know, killing the princess. Basically, he's the one who orchestrated the initial assassination with some of the other people who share his views that Earth deserves to get wrecked regardless of anyone's policies. But then when he learns that the princess is still alive and basically has her in his grasp almost, instead of trying to, I don't know, like capture her, because if it ever got out that he was responsible for the assassination that failed, the Martians who were loyal, like the guy he squished, would absolutely wreck him. But that never comes up. Instead of trying, when it becomes clear to everyone that the princess is still alive, that the initial assassination failed, he's like, "Oh crap, now we really have to kill her." It's like, no. Now you have to capture her and basically use
Right,
her as a
logic goes out
shield
the
to hold
window.
off everyone else from stomping on you. Like, if the emperor learns for a second time that his daughter is killed, he's not going to show any mercy to you. And if he finds out that you're holding her hostage, he's going to be much more hesitant. But it sort of, again, goes hand in hand with the where did your brutality
Right,
go?
and
Now this
right,
is
where'd your
just
brutality go? Where'd
simple-minded.
your tactics go?
And you know,
And it
it's
really
part
just
of the
doesn't
whole
fit
problem with him and the
together.
whole thing. I think the silliest thing for me in the whole show has got to be the villains, like Sao's Bomb's mech. Like, I actually laughed out loud, like alone, with no one else around, just started laughing when I saw that he had a transformation sequence for his mech.
I
Like,
forgot
if
all
you
about
thought that
that. Oh my
rocket
gosh,
punches
that's
were bad,
right.
like a full-up transformation with like a four-piece thing that comes together to form a mech, like what is this? You know, the heyday of super robot shows? And then his abilities are just everyone else's powers we fought in the show up to this point combined. It is the laziest writing I have seen in the show.
Right, it's like who stuck Gao Gaigar in my last episode, and why the heck, did you invite freaking what's his name who makes Mega Man? Like, what
Right,
just
and then, you
happened?
know, now goes up against him by himself without ever having seen him before and somehow holds him off. Like, all the show's writing and the realistic nature of it just completely breaks down. Like, I don't know,
Yeah,
disastrous.
oh my goodness.
And on top of all of it, they never explain where he gets the ability to use all of those powers. Like, as far as we can tell, the powers that Aldnoa grants to each mech, and by extension to the pilot, are
Right.
dependent on the core, on
Which
the
is super
reactor, or
tech that,
whatever it
like,
is that
they
runs the
found
whole
on
thing.
Mars, but they can't
And, like,
reproduce, or at least that's what it should be, what it seems like.
Right. I feel like all that made sense
yeah,
for a
but then
while until it just fell apart.
he's got all of these other powers suddenly. And it at no point do we see like him is like, oh, well, that is like that mech that they just defeated, that core is incredibly valuable. Someone go and retrieve it. We'll use it later. It never shows any of that, which again kind of, you know, brings up the whole what the heck is Vers doing half of this time when
Right,
they're
and
not trying to
if he
stomp
didn't
on
go get the
these
cores,
particular
which doesn't seem
people?
like he had time to do or whatever, like, if his mech can have all the powers, why don't all the Vers mechs just have all the powers? Like, the whole cool part was that they're limited in their powers, and that we need to figure out what the weaknesses are to defeat them. If you just have a mech that has every power, it's like, well, all right, why didn't you guys win already? You just build 300 of these things, we're done.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the Aldnoa powers start breaking down. It's really kind of crazy. So we only got a few minutes left, and we've been ragging on Varys for a while. So Scott, I do want to give you your moment in the sun to rag on Deucalion, because I know you weren't really a fan of that thing when it came out, and you mentioned you did laugh about it. To me, I didn't really have a problem with it, but now that you kind of mentioned it looks silly, I do think it looks a little bit like that Outlaw starship. And while I was looking at it, I remember just waiting for like little grappling
Grappler
hooks to come
arms.
out of it, like hands, and be like, hey, we're Deucalion. But yeah, definitely give us your spiel on why you hate that so
Like, well,
much.
so they you know, Heaven's Fall kills the enemy mech that can control gravity. So we got this gravity core, but no one really knows what it is, right? Everyone denies, Lieutenant, what's his name's report on it. So that would mean that Earth had a core, and they somehow knew it was gravity, and then they built an entire battleship around the maybe concept that they could lift it off one day if they figured out how Aldnoa cores work. And then they couldn't, so they left it in a cave somewhere, I guess. And then, we find it magically, and we turn it on because we magically happen to have the princess with us. And Now we have a flying battleship, something like, yeah, straight out of Outlaw Star or like Space Battleship Yamato, which is a fantastic show, but isn't this show. And I don't
Certainly.
know. And they never use it. They never shoot any of its guns. They fire the missiles once at their own base. And I don't know. It never serves any purpose other than being a fast transport ship, but we built it up so much. Like, oh, we have to have the princess because she can power the core. But what does it really do in the end? It slams into the side of someone's thing. You could have used a missile. You could have dropped a rock on his castle, and it would have been as effective as your entire super battleship. So.
Yeah.
Or at least when you slam
Like,
into the thing,
come
use the
on.
guns to open up a
Yeah,
hole.
no, they
Like,
just
like
ram into it
at
with the
least
face.
make
Right,
it
and oh, is
cool
that
if you're not
because,
going to have
maybe
it
they can't
fit.
shoot the guns because the bad guy was knocked out their gravity control when it was above the surface of the planet? Well, where did he go after that? He could have just shot it down. One hit was enough to wreck the whole ship, and then he just kind of goes away for a while until the invasion of his castle. Like, again, lazy writing there. I think we wrote ourselves into a corner. He's too strong, and he can't be detected, and he can blow up the battleship by thinking about it. So, he's not gonna do that.
They basically had to keep him
Right,
out of
they
a
just had
good
him
third of the
shoot the
final
ship down
fight.
and then just kind of float away, because otherwise, you would have killed everybody and ended the show right there.
Probably. I still think he needed to go contact the Gao Gaigar people so that he could get his mech to
Oh, that'd
transform.
be awesome.
But
Ha.
I'm just saying. All right, so I think we got to discuss the good, the bad, the ugly, and everything in between. So let's conclude what we really liked about the show. So I absolutely love the art. I loved the music. And I guess, do you guys want to talk about some of the other points we'd mentioned?
Yep, I love the. I mean, I loved, I guess, the realism in the thing, and the whole a bunch of weak mechs with teamwork can beat these super mechs if they think about it and like logically, and that's really cool. So I like that.
I agree. The kind of coordination versus overwhelming force was an excellent angle. It was not exactly not a perfect inversion, but definitely a very different look on on otherwise somewhat tried and true mech tropes. And it showed a ton of promise in the first three episodes between the battles with the mechs and the setup of the political tensions and the world building and everything. Just sell the show so strongly, which is why it's so disappointing when we
Yes, the
get into the
bad.
bad. We've been through
Yes.
a lot of stuff
Yes,
here,
the
but just like
bad.
the farther you go, the more it seems to fall apart, and it all kind of seems to come down to lazy writing, which just kills me.
Yeah, I definitely I'm gonna rag on the character development. I didn't get any, and where was it? I don't really buy into the fact that you only had 12 episodes. That is no excuse for your characters to not change at all for the entire time. So I was looking for character drama, and I didn't really get it. The character interactions, like I said, both on the Varus side and on the Earth side, really just sort of fell apart towards the end. Never changed, and didn't give me any sort of satisfaction at all.
And for me, it would definitely have to be the very end bits where, like, all logic and reason kind of goes out the window, especially on the villain side. And it's like they wanted to up the stakes to such a degree that it ceased to be rooted in reality. And I do have to diverge really quickly for the what. Besides the transforming mech, maybe the stupidest thing, there's a point where Slane is handcuffed in front of the real villain, and the real villain is basically trying to convince him to join him and, ready to hand him the keys to a big shiny new mech that he shouldn't by rights
Oh,
have any
yes.
ability to pilot anyway. And he's handcuffed. The villain pulls out a pistol and shoots the handcuffs off. But I would like to point out, he is holding the handcuffs down where you normally hold handcuffs if your hands are cuffed in front of you, right in front of his crotch. And he just shoots him straight. He doesn't like point the gun down or like have him raise his hand. No, just shoots it straight in there. It's like, are you kidding me? You could have killed this man
Or
or at
then
least
ricochets, or
shot
like,
him in
there's
the
so
junk.
many problems with shooting.
Any number of things could have gone wrong, but you needed to do a mustache
Yeah.
twirling villain act. Sorry for the tangent, but I had forgotten that
No, it's a
earlier.
good point to make because
Anyway.
the villain had a generic reason for fighting back, like the love of my life was killed in some episode you don't really care about. And I'm like, all right, that's sensational, bro. I'm sorry for
That's
you.
great, guy.
So yeah, that all just didn't work out. So like we mentioned before in the beginning of the podcast, none of us have seen or read anything about season two. And so let's do for fun our predictions of season two.
All right.
So, Scott, you want to kick us off?
Yeah, sure. All right. My prediction, so based on the ending of the show, which, I mean, you said spoilers, so, Inaho gets shot in the head, and the princess gets shot in the head, and Salzbomb gets shot in the head, leaving only Slane alive. That's what it looks like. He's the only one left living. So, assuming they don't pull some nonsense, I assume that the rest of the show is pretty much going to follow around Slane, who can now magically pilot a mech for reasons that don't make sense, like Dan mentioned. And he's going to basically have to personally lead the Earth defenses and somehow come around to working for them and take out the other guys. Or maybe he'll do it himself on a mission of revenge, but I don't know. Without logistical support, he's only going to get so far. But it's going to be like the Slane show from now on, I think. So that's my prediction.
Interesting.
What about you, Sue?
Okay, so I have a couple interesting things I'm going to pull from in order to make my prediction. So first of all, I've seen a Salem survive once, and I am semi-positive she's going to survive again for some reason. I feel like Aldnoa got out of control, and something's just going to keep her alive, because without her, I almost feel like the crux is gone, because if we're going to semi-believe Yuki, that now maybe has a thing for her a little bit, or at least wants to protect her, she's sort of a crux to the plot. So I believe she's going to survive. I'm not so sure on now, but one interesting thing I'd like to point out is that episode 12 is called Childhood's End. Childhood's End is actually an Arthur C. Clarke novel about a peaceful alien race overtaking Earth and then creating a utopia-like world or situation or something by stripping humanity out of humans. And I had that kind of thought when we got to see the sequences Scott and Dan were talking about, where basically we look to see what Varys is doing, and it's just the generals talking at each other through little pods. It reminded me a lot of H.G. Wells' The Machine Stops, where humanity gets so detached from one another that we have no idea how to communicate anymore, and we just live underground, like not communicating with one another and living in these pods where we simulate everything we've ever wanted, but we're completely and utterly solitary creatures. It felt a lot like Mars was us, but being stripped of our humanity. And the ending of the theme song has a Salem with a gun crying and pointing at the camera and firing. So, based on all of that, I actually think that Slane, because he shoots after a Salem gets shot and he believes she's dead because I think she's alive, he shoots now, and I believe he's going to go down a path of losing his humanity. And in the end, it is sort of going to be the him show where he's piloting this mech around, but he as a character is going to, I hope, go through a lot of transformation in not really understanding if he wants to protect the princess anymore because his noble quest backfired on him so hard. And he's just going to try and take out everybody and in the end become the monster that he sought to fight against to protect the princess. And I think she is going to be the one to shoot him in the end. And that's going to be our sort of semi-tragic ending in which, we get this sense of stripped humanity and what it means to be human, and tie all of those things and themes I was talking about back together.
Boy,
So
something that intense seems like you gotta get Gen back.
yes, I hope they get Gen back, and that, or I hope they hire me as their writer because I'll make it
Nice.
happen. But I guess since the show is already going on, there's very little chance of that. But anyway, that's what I am predicting. So that was long. Sorry, Dan.
That's okay. I don't know, honestly. I am really hard up to determine who lived and who died in that last scene. But I would say that Slane obviously is the only one we guaranteed to survive, and combination of a quest for revenge, or either going to be a quest for revenge against all of Mars, with either new characters or selected people from the original crew, kind of sort of fighting him, or like not necessarily being on the same side as they're trying to take back Earth. Or if they want to go the more heroic route, him trying to rally the factions of the
Oh, yeah, and
Martians
them,
that didn't necessarily want war, or rather, we're loyal to
Oh,
the
so like
princess and the emperor,
the big, the big
trying to
strong guys
rally
fight each
them
other, and Earth kind of
to
waits in the wings until, yeah, to see what happens.
Earth kind of just
Interesting.
becomes the battleground, yeah. I wouldn't be shocked if that was what happened, because so far we haven't seen the super mechs fighting each other, and that seems to be an interesting trick they could pull. I don't know though. I am very, very stretched to the limits of my imagination about how they're going to salvage this to make up for the holes in the end of the original series and also keep us interested throughout the rest, because it could take 12 episodes to explain all of the stuff that
That's true. Yeah, I'm
we
worried if they're
didn't
even going to
get in
finish
the
it. I
first
mean, it
one.
took absolutely every character, mech, thing, flying battleship, and other nonsense that Earth could put together, and we took out one landing castle. So I don't know how they're going to wrap this
That's
up.
true. That's true. Well, here's hoping that season two is awesome and at least pulls together some of the ideas we've been talking about or fills in some of the holes we
Yeah, I mean,
talked
I'd
about in
recommend
our
watching the
what's bad
show,
about the
sure,
show.
especially because I
I
want to
would
see what happens next.
absolutely recommend watching the show and tuning in for season two because even we haven't seen it.
Yeah, we'll probably do a podcast on that when we watch it.
Despite all of our complaints, despite all of our complaints, it's still there's very little else like it, and even if you're only in it for the first few episodes, those are a heck of a ride.
Yeah.
It's true. It is fantastic. So, everybody, thanks a lot for listening to our podcast, and we'll be back next time with some more interesting stuff.